for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
Welcome back, everybody, to the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer, Tyler Lochner with you on this Wednesday, June 29th, 2022, approaching July, approaching Stranger Things.
Dude,
again.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited.
Yeah, I looked at the calendar and I saw it was almost July and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Stranger Things is not quite over.
Does that
come
out on Friday?
It does come out on Friday. So
we are not recording a podcast on Friday, I'll tell you that.
Or Saturday. Actually, yeah. I was gonna say or Saturday or Sunday, but knowing me, I'll watch the whole thing in one day. But
it's an hour and a half and 2.5 hour episodes. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's like a full length motion picture, which is some people might think it's annoying. I love it. I'm so excited. But
the fact we're already talking about something different, I think will tell you how exciting today's team is.
Listen, we talked about the Giants on Monday. The Eagles were the first episode of the NFC East preview back on Friday. It's good timing, though, I will say, to preview the Washington Commanders. And I want to say I've practiced this in the mirror like 3 times, so I didn't say football team. So props to me for saying the Washington Commanders. They are next up on the team preview series here on the DataCast. Again, rate, review, subscribe, all that great stuff so you do not miss a single episode. But yeah, let's get into this team, Tyler. Last year was kind of what we've seen from this team for the past couple of seasons, right? Some really talented players on both sides of the ball, but not consistent play at quarterback, which we'll get into. And defense lost some players due to injury, Chase Young, and they were just kind of a middling team in the NFC East. But now we fast forward to 2022, and Carson Wentz, the Colts moved on from him, clearly made an effort to move on from him right after the season, and Washington acquired him. And let's start with Carson Wentz. I mean, look, he's obviously fallen off after his MVP caliber season a few seasons ago in Philadelphia. You can point out some numbers, and we will. That's what we do on the DataCast, showing that he is not a great quarterback. But at the end of the day, because he's not going to be a quarterback you're starting in traditional 12-team, one-quarterback redraft leagues, all that really matters to me, and I guess if you're interested in him in two-quarterback leagues at any capacity, you can touch on that. All that matters to me is Carson Wentz better than what they've had at quarterback for Terry McLaurin? The answer, I believe, is yes.
I also believe the answer is yes. Not by a lot, though. It's an upgrade, so I'll give him that. From a fantasy perspective, Wentz is not interesting. Like, even in two quarterback leagues, I struggle to be interested in him.
I know, so you weren't in on Daniel Jones. Would you rather have Daniel Jones or Wentz as your second quarterback?
I would rather have Daniel Jones.
Yeah, it's not even close for me. Like,
yeah,
like, Wentz, the thing with him is, like, there's going to be a higher ceiling for passing volume, I would imagine, in this offense. Not saying they're going to be
the
Bills or anything. That team last year in Indianapolis was Jonathan Taylor, 25 carries. Carson Wentz will throw 27 to 30 times and play good defense. And they did, because they led the NFL in defensively in forced fumbles. They were third in interception. So, like, they were in not many game scripts where they had to throw a lot.
Yeah, he had – I just had it. And then I lost it. I think he had 522 pass attempts last year, which is close to like 20th total pass attempts last year in the NFL. And when you're talking about the elite, high-end quarterbacks, Brady, Allen, even Derek Carr, they had 150, 200 more pass attempts than him. So definite room for improvement there. And I agree with you. I think we see it. I mean, Jonathan Taylor was just fed the ball a ridiculous amount last year. And to Wentz's detriment, almost none of that was through the air. And, also to Jonathan Taylor's detriment. I will say one positive thing about Wentz is he actually protected the ball pretty well last year. He only threw 7 interceptions. He did only have 27 touchdowns, which in today's NFL, anything lower than 30 is not very many, but 7 interceptions is certainly not bad and not really what I would have expected just going in and looking at it. Because
I will
say
he should have thrown 15. He threw so many just jump balls that should have been intercepted or could have been intercepted that led to either Michael Pittman bailing him out, which we'll get into with Terry McLaurin, or a defensive pass. Remember, it was literally like, you know, the meme of, screw it. Tyreek Hill's down there somewhere, whoever, like whatever, you know, whatever receiver, Mike Evans is down there somewhere. Just throw it up. That was Carson Wentz with Michael Pittman last year to a T. So he had, according to our advanced passing numbers at FTN Fantasy, Carson Wentz had 27.
I see 27 interception-worthy throws, seven of which were intercepted. And you're right. So for comparison, Josh Allen had 29 interception-worthy throws. So similar number. Joe Burrow had 27. Burrow and Allen each threw 14 and 15 interceptions. So, you're right. Wentz's expected interceptions probably should have been double that.
But like at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter to me if we're talking about Terry McLaurin, because Terry McLaurin last season led the NFL in contested targets with Taylor Heineke, who had 29, I believe it was. Or, 37 interception.
Yeah, he had 37 passes,
second most in the NFL behind Trevor Lawrence. So I was watching a bunch of his highlights from last season. Terry McLaurin, to nobody's surprise, gets open at will, is elite at getting open down the field and creating separation. But there were so many plays where Heineke either threw it late or threw it 50 feet in the air, and it took forever to get to him. And by the time the ball got there, McLaurin was double teamed or had to make a ridiculous contested catch. So
Heineke had 18 highlight. We have a stat called highlight worthy throws. So throws where only the receiver could catch it. Heineke only had 18 such throws last year, and the company he kept there was Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill,
Davis
Mills, Trevor Lawrence.
I wonder where he ranked in throws where only the cornerback could catch it, or the safety could catch it.
Apparently he had the second most interception-worthy throws. So anyway, that was Heineke's company there. Wentz, while he's not consistent, he did have 27 highlight-worthy throws, which ranked in the top 10. His company was Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott. So, he even had more than Patrick Mahomes, who only had 25. I think it was kind of a down year for Mahomes, but still, it does show that I think across the board, Wentz is an upgrade. And I don't think that makes Wentz interesting to me for fantasy, but I think we're primarily talking about McLaurin here.
Yeah, and I will say Wentz's deep ball is I would say, like, slightly above average. Last season, he completed 42.6% of his passes of 20 yards or more down the field. That was, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, ninth best in the NFL. And, like, Mike White's in there because he had 132 pass attempts. This is quarterbacks at least 100 pass attempts. So if you want to take him out of that because he only played four games, okay, it's eighth best in the league. So he can throw the deep ball, and McLaurin, that's really where his numbers struggled last season because the quarterbacks in Washington couldn't consistently get him the ball down the field. But like you look at the season-ending numbers for McLaurin, he's still 1,000 yards. The touchdowns came down, and the overall week-to-week consistency came down. I wonder if he was in your least consistent or where he kind of ranked, because I know you're doing the consistency articles over at FTN. Real quick, we'll close on Carson Wentz. Like, he's going to have weeks because he's obviously viable in super flex because he's a starting quarterback. I don't envision him losing his job or anything like that. And he's much better than what they've had. So like if you've been all in on Terry McLaurin the last couple seasons, especially now that he just signed his contract extension, which we probably should have led with, but Terry McLaurin yesterday, perfect timing, signed his contract extension. I believe it was a 3-year deal. So if you've been high on Terry McLaurin and you've been in on Terry McLaurin, I don't see why now, especially after yesterday, you'd be all of a sudden moving off of him. Same offensive coordinator with Scott Turner. Sure, they add Jahan Dotson, who we'll also talk about, but he should still be in that 25 to 26% market share. And in terms of percentage of teams' air yards, he's been elite, kind of like we talked about with
AJ Brown.
Yeah, McLaurin's been awesome in that category too. So
yeah, McLaurin had 42.4% of his team's air yards last year, which was third highest in the league behind Jefferson and AJ Brown. So yeah, elite company. I really like McLaurin. He usually comes off the board around wide receiver 20 right now.
Do we think that skyrockets, but goes up after the, because there was a concern about, you know, potential holdout and not being quite ready for when training camp starts and missing some valuable time. But now that that's in the past and not a concern, like, do we think he gets up to maybe wide receiver 15 or so? Because I think I have him like around wide receiver 16, 17. Like he's right behind Pittman and I believe Sutton for me. So he's in that tier. He's right in that tier.
I don't think that his ADP will move significantly based on his signing. It might, but it would not surprise me if his ADP creeps up throughout the rest of the summer, because where he's going right now, wide receiver 20, I've seen him come off the board as like the wide receiver 22, 23. And I'm talking about underdog best ball drafts. Promo code FTN gets you an extra $100. He like, it would surprise absolutely nobody if McLaurin finishes the top 10 fantasy wide receiver. So in terms of where he's going versus his potential upside, I really like it. And I think if we like Michael Pittman and we look at Michael Pittman from last year, I'm like, oh, he kind of had a breakout year, and we're drafting Michael Pittman ahead of Terry McLaurin. Pittman's situation is not that different than McLaurin's. So like at cost, I would 100% rather have McLaurin.
I mean, you look at Michael Pittman, and again, I've kind of talked about my love for Michael Pittman this season. You look at his season ending numbers from last season, 88 catches, just under 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns. Terry McLaurin could get that in his sleep.
Yeah.
And that's not to say Michael Pittman's not good. I think Michael Pittman's an ascending receiver in this league, but Terry McLaurin has been an ascending receiver in this league. And like 88 for 1,106, like again, Terry McLaurin could get that easily. So, I think it's an interesting point. Like I have Pittman slightly ahead of McLaurin, but like now that he's, you know, good to go with his contract, I do believe Wentz is an upgrade. There's no reason to not like Terry McLaurin as a, you know, I think he should go in within the first four rounds in fantasy drafts. But the number, like, I think it's going to be a little bit similar to with Michael Pittman last year, right? Like McLaurin last season led the NFL in contested targets and I believe contested receptions. He had like 17, contested receptions or something like that. Like he is probably going to fill that same kind of role we saw from Pittman where he was getting a ton of contested looks.
A player who, from a stat perspective, comes out last year extremely similar to McLaurin was Darnell Mooney.
Yeah.
And T. Higgins. Higgins did it on a lot less volume, so Mooney might be a slightly better comparison, but Mooney also had a significantly lower average depth of target, whereas Higgins had a 12-yard average depth of target. McLaurin was at 13. Mooney was down at 10.5, so not exactly the same in terms of where he's used across the field, but all of those players were in like the 75 to 80 reception range, 4 to 6 touchdowns, and just under 1,100 yards. And like we're drafting Higgins so much higher than McLaurin, and it's purely because of the quarterback situation. Like if McLaurin was on the Bengals, if he was the wide receiver 2 on the Bengals, we would be drafting him as a top 10 wide receiver, like no doubt.
I mean, if Terry McLaurin was the wide, and like, I don't even want to go there because like I'm drafting T. Higgins where I'm drafting him, A, because he's on that offense, B, because I've loved T. Higgins since Clemson. Like I remember there was the year he was drafted. It was right before the Bills traded for Stephon Diggs. I was like, please, Buffalo, go draft T. Higgins. And of course they traded for Stephon Diggs. But like McLaurin is, you can make the case talent wise, he's top 12 in the NFL. And if the quarterback play is improved in any capacity, which we both believe it will be, a top 12 finish for him in fantasy is not out of the range of outcomes. I think he needs a touchdown to go up a little bit. Like I don't think he's been over 6 in his career. Actually, he hasn't been over 5 so far in his career. Since his rookie season, he caught 7, I believe. So like he might need to get up to like 7-8 touchdowns again, but that's still possible. He's still an immensely talented player. You've seen the highlights from that game against the Chargers where there was a ball thrown that was like, you know, leaning out of bounds and McLaurin adjusted his body. Like he's so good. So yeah, I would expect that, you know, 130 minimum targets from him, can easily get to 80 catches, 1,100 yards. Like again, like Michael Pittman's season from last year is within the range of outcomes easily for McLaurin.
Yeah, high end wide receiver too. That's why.
The only difference I will say is last year Michael Pittman's competition for targets. I'm not saying McLaurin's dealing with like a bunch of, you know, talent at receiver and everything, but like Michael Pittman had nothing after him last season. So that would kind of segue in us to the other pass catchers on this team. They draft Jahan Dotson in the first round, which was pretty surprising where he went compared to some other receivers, but he goes early in the first round, should slide in as a number 2 receiver on this team. Mm-hmm. They still have Curtis Samuel, who, remember this time last year, there was so much hype about Curtis Samuel. He was like a 7th, 8th round ADP. And a lot of it was the familiarity with Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator who was in Carolina. Obviously, Ron Rivera knows him from his time in Carolina as well. And at that time, it was McLaurin and then who else? Like, Samuel had that opportunity, and he just could not shake a hamstring injury from the beginning of the season. So, thoughts on Samuel as a maybe post-hype sleeper? Obviously, not as appealing now with Jahan Dotson there, who a little bit undersized, but a really good route runner, tremendous hands. He has some of the best hands in college football last season. What do we make of the rest of the pass catchers on this team? And then Logan Thomas, who's been pretty good in fantasy since joining Washington, but he's coming off an injury as well.
Yeah, not a lot of interest, honestly. Dotson I have ranked as my wide receiver 62 right now. Curtis Samuel I have as my wide receiver 79. So these are players that, like, maybe really late in the draft, like 13th, 14th round, I will spatter them in some places. I think Dotson more so than Samuel. But honestly, neither of them are incredibly interesting to me. The only reason I like Dotson maybe a little bit more is because of the draft capital. Like,
yeah. Dynasty, I remember there was a lot of drafts, like rookie drafts, where he went in the start of the second round. Like in the one league I won the championship and I had the 112, he was still there for me at the 112. I was like, you know, I already have a loaded team, but to get Jahan Dotson at the 112, like, dynasty wise, he's still very appealing. Obviously, there could have been even more appeal if we got a McLaurin trade or whatever, but they obviously got that deal done. How old do you think Curtis Samuel is?
26.
Yeah, he's going to be 26 this season, which I thought he was older. I definitely thought he was older.
Yeah, it does feel like he's been around forever.
He's missed 23 games last in his career, which has been 4 or 5 seasons. So the durability is a concern. I think we see him used as... I think he's going to be like used kind of like Kadarius Toney was last year, but just not as explosive, not as talented. A lot of, you know, close to line of scrimmage stuff. But yeah, like where you said you have Dotson and Samuel ranked, if I had to bet on any of these two becoming fantasy relevant in traditional 12-team leagues, it would be Dotson. But I don't see Carson Wentz being able to support, you know, McLaurin, maybe a tight end, and one of these receivers. Let's close out with Logan Thomas, who I have some interest in. Like, he's going, like, outside the top 20 tight ends, and I get it, coming off an injury-plagued season. Didn't play till... You know, didn't play much until about week 12, then came back for a couple games. Then he tore his ACL. 31 years old, like not a ton of explosiveness left, you would imagine, but he's going to be the tight end one. Carson Wentz has relied on his tight ends a lot. And granted, it's been with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert in Philadelphia. But like, if you're looking at some of the late tight ends, like I have no problem taking a shot on Logan Thomas. I think he's going to be involved with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I'm coming around on him a little bit as a late round option. He was a player, don't forget, he was being drafted as a tight end one, like a tail end tight end one.
He was really good 2 years ago.
Yeah, 10 to 12 range just last year. But I agree with you. I mean, Wentz does target, he does target his tight ends. And last year, Ricky Seals-Jones was actually second on the Commanders in red zone targets.
Was like very fantasy relevant and most of the games Logan Thomas was out, like he was like being ranked like borderline top 12, which again, top 12 for tight end isn't like, oh my goodness, but it like he was like a 90% snap player.
Yeah,
ran a route like on 85-90% of the dropback. So like he was an every down player, and like he's obviously in with the Giants now, like they don't have anything after Logan Thomas at tight end to where it's like, okay, Logan Thomas, as long as he's healthy. Like, they have John Bates. John Bates is one of the best blocking tight ends in football, but he's not going to take a lot of passing work away from Logan Thomas if he's healthy.
Mo Alie-Cox and Jack Doyle combined for 28 red zone targets last year. Michael Pittman had 29. Zach Pascal had 21. So, you know, on Washington, you mentioned Bates. I agree with you. I don't think, I mean, he might see, what, 5-6 red zone targets, so... It wouldn't shock me, honestly, if Thomas ended up with the second most red zone targets on Washington. But
behind JD McKissick.
I kind of forgot they have him. So maybe third.
No, like Logan Thomas could easily be second. I was half joking, but now I think about it like...
No, you're actually right about that because they love him, clearly.
Yeah, let's get into it. We talk a lot about Gabriel Davis and some of the most polarizing players in fantasy football. Antonio Gibson has to be in that discussion. Like, coming out of Memphis, he was so exciting. He played receiver, then he moved to running back, and we've seen all the skill sets. He's got the size, he's got the receiving ability, but Washington, for whatever reason, hasn't consistently given him the workload, and it's been pretty frustrating. It was kind of like a tale of two seasons for him last year. He started the season off as, you know, he was fine when McKissick was healthy, but then there, like, he had a bunch going on. He had to, you know, he was losing third down and pass catching opportunities from McKissick, and then he was dealing with that shin injury. He was on the injury report every week, if you remember. So he clearly wasn't playing 100%. And then the last, I think, five games of the season, J.D. McKissick was sidelined, and that's where we saw Gibson. Look at the splits last season, according to FTN Daily's splits tool. In five games of McKissick out of the lineup, Gibson's targets went from 2.7 per game to 4.4 per game. His receptions went over 3 per game, and he averaged about almost 3 more PPR points per game. McKissick, it's not like it was like, okay, you know, free agency's dragging on. Nobody's made a move to acquire J.D. McKissick. We'll bring him back on a cheap deal. Like, no, it was Buffalo had him. And Washington was like, no, like, we can't afford to lose this guy.
Right.
And they brought him back. And then on a team that didn't have a lot of draft picks, remember, Washington was not loaded with draft picks heading into this NFL draft in April. They spent a third round pick on Brian Robinson,
who they've been talking
up more and more each week, it feels like. Ron Rivera, because he can't stop talking about the Carolina Panthers, likened the pairing of Gibson and Brian Robinson to Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams back in Carolina. So everything that you talk about this a lot, everything that Washington's telling us right now is that they don't view Gibson as an every down back. And we've seen that when they've had backs out, you know, healthy. You know, when McKissick was healthy, Gibson was averaging like 2 targets per game. Like, I don't see a path for Gibson to be top 12 or anything. Now, his ADP continues to fall. He's going like later and later each draft, but like, what's the difference between him and a lot of these other running backs going around him right now? Like, I remember like a month and a half ago, I tweeted Devin Singletary over Antonio Gibson in 2022. And of course, people thought it was crazy, but like, I don't know how crazy it is. Like, both running backs are not going to be elite in terms of pass catch usage or even close to it. But Singletary probably has a better path for overall carries, and he's in a better offense. Like, I'm out on Gibson. Unless he keeps falling and falling to like a price where he's like the 6th round or something, I just don't see a situation where I feel great about it.
Yeah, as much as it stinks, I'm also out on Gibson. Right now, where is he going? He's like running back 20. You're right. It drops and changes every single day. But he's kind of going right where I have him, where he comes out in projections, like that wide receiver 20 range. My concern with it is that I think there's a greater chance for him to be worse than there is for him to be better than that. So I'm looking right now. He's coming off the board as the running back 23. He's right behind Montgomery, J.K. Dobbins, Josh Jacobs, right ahead of Elijah Mitchell, A.J. Dillon, Clyde, Miles Sanders. Like, I think we talked about this in a previous podcast. This is the group of running backs that we just don't love, right? Like, there's a couple players in there.
Range where you're targeting breakout receivers.
Right.
Every year. We see it. That's the range where Cooper Kupp went last season, right? Like 4th round or so. Like,
the only running back I personally like in this range is A.J. Dillon.
Yeah, I have Gibson as my RB24 right now. But like, honestly, and I talked about how I don't love Elijah Mitchell, but I think I might move Elijah Mitchell back ahead of him. And Miles Sanders, I might move Miles Sanders ahead of him. Like,
I have him weird as my too, because
he's been so good as a pass catcher. Like, he's good as a, like, he played receiver at Memphis. Like, I don't understand. And to be fair, J.D. McKissick is not only an elite pass catcher, he might be the best pass blocking running back in the NFL that nobody talks about, which is very important. So there's no surprise why he plays so much. But
the
Brian Robinson pick, just like,
yeah, the Brian Robinson
draft capital,
the Brian Robinson pick. The talk of making it like a D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart pairing. J.D. McKissick coming back. All of it went from Gibson being like maybe my favorite fantasy running back in the middle of March. Like, J.D. McKissick is leaving. Antonio Gibson's finally going to get the pass.
Yeah.
Like, he would have been a maybe.
It reminded me of Javonte Williams when it looked like Melvin Gordon was going to be back. It was like Javonte was a back end of the first round selection in fantasy. And then once JD McKissick, there was a report that Buffalo was adding him to the team. It was like, okay, Gibson might be a second round pick at this point.
Yeah.
And then it just completely fell off. But then it got even worse because there was all these different reports. And then they draft Brian Robinson. And it's just like...
Gibson had the third most red zone carries last year, 47. He had the third most goal line carries behind Jonathan Taylor and James Conner.
Where does that go now? Because that was Brian Robinson's role at Alabama. That was something they're talking up. Yeah.
Brian Robinson is, that's my biggest concern with Brian Robinson taking it. He's heavier than Gibson. I think Gibson is like an inch taller. So from like a height or from a size perspective, they're nearly identical, but Gibson was not very efficient on the goal line. He scored 6 touchdowns on his 17 goal line attempts. The other running backs in his range, James Conner, 10 on 18. Damian Harris, 9 on 16. Austin Eckler, 9 on 16. So Gibson was not great at converting those. So I think there's a chance he loses the role to Brian Robinson. I think there's a chance he loses the early down work to Brian Robinson. I also think there's a chance that this just becomes like, this drive, it's Antonio Gibson, and next drive, it's Brian Robinson. Like, it's just, it's setting up to be a fantasy headache. I'm drafting some Brian Robinson in best ball just in case he, you know, becomes the goal line back. I just think things are looking bleak for Gibson. I still think he's going to be the guy, at least to open the season. I don't think he's like going to be a bad fantasy player, but I don't think he's going to be I don't think he's going to be a fun fantasy player to own this year.
Like, the problem is, if he's already not getting elite or close to elite passing game work with McKissick back, and then if he does lose goal line work to Brian Robinson, you're looking at him getting first and second down carries from the middle of the field, which are like the least valuable touches in fantasy for any running back.
Yeah.
In an offense that's probably going to max out at like the 18th, 19th best offense in the NFL. Where he's going, I don't know if you have the ADP in front of you for underdog or anything, but like where he's going.
RB23.
Like, do you know where, like, which receivers are going around there? I'm assuming that's where like Gabriel Davis goes.
Yep, I have it here.
Yeah, list some of the receivers going where he's going, because like there's a chance that I'd prefer every receiver going where he's going over Antonio Gibson.
So I'm going to list some that are going before him and some after him.
Okay.
Chris Godwin, Amari Cooper, Amon-Ra, Elijah Moore, Devontae Smith, Dalton Schultz, shout out, you love him, Adam Thielen, Drake London, DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Russell Gage.
Yeah, I mean, the only one I'm even hesitating on is Godwin, just because we don't know when he's going to play. But obviously, Godwin would be a second round, third round pick if he was healthy.
I am probably drafting way too much Chris Godwin. I'm drafting him like everywhere.
I started the offseason drafting him everywhere, and then the reports came out that he might not be back before. He might start in the pup, and I'm like, damn. But the thing with Godwin is, like, once he's back, he's returning third round value. So, but yeah, like Gibson, I think his ceiling is like RB15 at this point. Because the two things we like most for fantasy are touchdowns and receptions. And I don't know what his ceiling is for either, given the moves that Washington has made this offseason.
And in truth, his floor is like 4 points a game. Like, he has a really...
Is he going to be Damian Harris?
He has a terrifying floor.
Yeah. Without the elite... Because Damian Harris' goal line work was elite. Like, is he going to be...
Yeah, he might be Damian Harris minus touchdowns.
Once Ramondre Stevenson kind of got going and started to play more, that might be Gibson's role this year. Because think about it. Who played on third downs for this team last year? Brandon Bolden. Who got some carries at the goal line and got some carries overall? Ramondre Stevenson. Harris lived off insane touchdowns. I don't know if we're going to see that from Gibson if Brian Robinson's getting that role. So if he continues to fall, sure. But like, don't expect him to be top 12, which is a shame, because like, it looked like ascending-wise, dynasty-wise, like he was going to be one of the top tier running backs in dynasty, because he's shown talent. He's still young. He's been good in fantasy and he's a capable pass catcher. But for whatever reason, Washington just hasn't wanted to. And it's weird too, because remember a couple years ago, there were Christian McCaffrey comps, because of course there were, in terms of his usage and everything and what he can do as a pass catcher. And we just have not seen that. So,
Brian Robinson is also really good. First of all,
talk about Robinson, and then we'll close out with McKissick, because I do want to talk about McKissick, because he's in that range where it's like, okay, you're not going to get a lot of carries, but he's going to catch probably you know, upwards of maybe 60 passes potentially. And we've seen him, like last year, he was very viable when he's, when you've had to start him. What do you have, 50 catches or 43 catches last year, but he also missed five games.
Yeah, McKissick played about 50% of the snaps when he was out on the field. A great, like, flex filler. And occasionally would have a big week if he caught a touchdown or two.
I have no clue how often Wentz is going to throw to the running backs, because you look at the overall numbers last season. The Colts targeted the running backs about 25% of the time, which was well above league average. It was actually one of the highest rates in the NFL. But it wasn't to Jonathan Taylor. Like, Wentz did not throw to Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah,
I remember there was a play against the Titans in overtime where he had him wide open on a check down where there was nobody near him. He could have got like 25 yards and he forced a throw that got intercepted and the Colts lost the game. And then in the past, Wentz hasn't really thrown to his running backs either. So I don't know where to kind of slide this target share for McKissick, but like, he's going to be the third down and 2 minute drill running back. Like, I don't think it's a question, and they value him heavily.
Wentz hasn't thrown to running backs like in the red zone either. Nyheim Hines only had 7 red zone targets last year, which was 5th. Like, pretty, you know, pretty buried on the Colts. Jonathan Taylor only had 4. So
Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator, his running back target shares have all been above league average every year he's been a coordinator, whether it's been with Washington or what have you. But he's also had McCaffrey in Carolina. But like the last 2 years, it's been 21.8% and just over 20%, which the league average during those seasons was around 18.5%. So he's been a league average in terms of a play caller, which it kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that Washington clearly loves J.D. McKissick.
I have a level of interest in McKissick in redraft leagues or deep dynasty leagues more than I do in best ball. So just to clarify for listeners, that's kind of how I feel about him. I have him as my RB51 right now. And that's just where I have him ranked, like in terms of expected, you know, total points scored. But there are some running backs going in his range, like Darrell Williams. We talked about him with a higher potential ceiling, because McKissick would require like injuries to both Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson,
maybe even Jarrett Patterson, because I don't even know if McKissick would be the every down running back if both running backs were missing time.
He wouldn't be. That's what I'm saying. Like in order to even see a few more carries, that would have to happen. But he would never become a player that would get 15 carries a game in addition to his receiving work. So I don't mind him as like a spot starter in redraft leagues, but just my style of play, don't love him in best ball.
Yeah, so the pass catcher running backs in best ball are interesting, because like they aren't going to be at the end of the season like, oh, you drafted McKissick as RB51 and he finishes RB14. Like, that's not going to happen. But in terms of not knowing when to start the pass catcher running backs, it's like you don't know on a week-to-week basis when Washington's going to be chasing points and down 17 in the first quarter. Those are the games where McKissick can be good, but you don't know that. So it's like he will have better opportunities to feel like you don't have to worry about when to start him and you know, James White and Nyheim Hines and everything like that in those situations. But anything else to close out the Washington Commanders? Because
I'll just talk real quick about Brian Robinson.
Yeah, go for it.
First of all, I feel like Alabama running backs are always really good. Maybe I don't actually have a list in front of me, but it seems like Alabama running backs are just straight up good. And Robinson was really good in college last year. He had over 1,300 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns, but he also caught the ball. He had 35 receptions, 300 yards through the air.
And again, 35 receptions for a college running back is a lot.
Yeah. So like Gibson might lose receiving work to Robinson. J.D. McKissick might even, like, if Robinson is good, I truly think there's a path for him to be the featured running back. Like maybe not in when they're down by 17 in the first quarter. But I could see him being used kind of like the Bucks used Leonard Fournette in terms of usage, like just becomes the guy that is trustworthy and on the field all the time. So I'm not necessarily predicting that. I'm just saying Robinson has that skill set, which is great. It's great for him. It's horrible for Antonio Gibson. And Robinson's also really elusive. He had 79 missed tackles forced last year, which was tops among all SEC running backs. So he's a good player. He's a really good player.
It appears Tyler likes Brian Robinson where he's going more than Antonio Gibson, which, again, Gibson, one of the most polarizing players in fantasy. But the timing for this episode was perfect. Terry McLaurin, you know, extended for the next 3 years by Washington on Tuesday. So he's good to go. I'm excited to watch him play. And we'll see what this Washington football team looks like. Or sorry, there, I did it. The Commanders.
Yeah, almost Washington made Commanders.
I really did. But that'll do it for us here on FTN DataCast. We'll close out the NFC East with a look at the Dallas Cowboys up next. And we'll continue to move on with these team previews. They've been very fun, informative. And again, all the content, all the information, FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets. Make sure you check out Jeff Ratcliffe's incredible, incredible work. He launched it, yesterday? Or Monday. It was Monday he launched. So I don't know if you haven't already checked it out. And check out the Platinum Package. The FTN Fantasy Game Plan is part of it. So make sure you check that out. We'll be back next time for the Dallas Cowboys preview. Thanks for listening as always. Have a great rest of your week. This has been the FTN DataCast. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.